Gimel. On page 515, we are in the middle of Pasuk Yud Gimel. Yud Gimel. We really that was part of our series. We pretty much finished. I think we pretty much finished everything except for the Likutei Shas. That we did not do, and maybe we'll do a little bit of Wazir Chidah here. Do I remember Wazir Chidah they wanted to do? No, I don't see it. Okay, so let's just take a look over here quickly. This was one Maamar Chazal. We finished the Malbums. Let's go back and take a look at the Malbums. The Malbum Pasuk Yud Gimel. Pasuk, okay. Okay, let's go further. Let's do Likutei Shas. Likutei Shas, is only one. There is only one Likutei Shas, one small little Maamar Chazal before we go further. And that is on page 515. Ulashaynam Remia Bithiyem. Can everyone see that? Page 515. Ulashaynam Remia Bithiyem. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kol HaMasabah Lashonara Negoim Boimolav Yesh Loi Mikrois Harbei. Any person who speaks Lashon Hara, what is the punishment? Lashon, you get Negoim Tzaras. The Omer, what's the source? The source says, the Omer ulishaynam remi b'fihem, in their tongues there's deceit, ma'akos v'achara v'gam ani hechelesi ha'koisecha. How do you know? Now here this is nigo'im. It doesn't say exactly what it is, but it says over here, we make the juxtaposition of these two psukim together, teaching that the punishment for speaking Lashon Hara, lishaynam remiyah, is the ha'koisecha, the wounds are going to be intensified. Okay, that pretty much concludes the section. Let's now go on to the next section. Pasuk Yudalit. Ata seichal v'lo sispa. These are also part of the list. These are the list of punishments that will come upon the Jewish people for not obeying the instructions of Micha to do teshuva. Ata you seichal v'lo sispa. You will eat you and you will not be satisfied. The yesh chacha bikir becha. And it's a play on the words of yesh. What does it mean over here? The yesh chacha, you will be humbled. Okay, vayishach adam, you will be lowered. Bikir becha, you will have low self-esteem. You will be depressed. You'll suffer psychologically from your situation. V'saseg v'loy saflit, you will have desires, hasagos, but v'loy saflit, you will not be successful. These are all, this idea is, okay, the different interpretations, saseg also, look at real quickly in the Metzudot, see before we read inside is, you will overcome your enemy. Afim tasig es ha'oyev ha'molichem esmanecha ba'shevi, you're not going to be able to sifalate, to escape, to bring success. Lacherev attain, but instead you'll be delivered over to the sword. Okay, so we'll see them a few more. Let's do a few things together. We'll just get a little taste. But basically, what the Pasuk over here is saying, this is a very big tease. Pasuk Yudalid is a unique type of punishment. That's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you the taste of success and yet does not let you fully enjoy it. In many ways, that's worse. When you tease someone that is worse than actually denying from him a reward at all. I'll give you an example in a moment. Let's just first go to read the next psukim. Pasuk Tezvav Atayu Sizrav Loisik. So you will harvest. You will seed. Loisik Sar. Ata, you'll sow, v'lo sikso, you will sow, you will not harvest. Ata, sidroch zayis, you will trample upon, press olives, v'lo sasuch shemba, you'll press upon the olive, the oil will not flow. V'siroish, now you have to repeat the words. Sidroch, you will press upon the grapes, but v'lo sishte yoyin, you will not merit to drink the wine. V'yishtamer chukois omri, you will guard the chukois omri. Now this means the. Let's look at the mitzvah stuff. It's more precise. Ritzad leimar im kol hayyudim. I'm reading the mitzvah very quickly. We're going to go through it slowly in a moment. All of these things, it's going to be guarded. The chukois the laws of the goyim. Amri means Amri is the son of Achav. Okay, Amri was one of the kings. The chol maaseh ve'sachav, the selchu bimo atso sam. You will go in their sad ways. You'll know there's this is like a euphemism. It's a description of avodah zarah. Avodah zarah makes you sad. Leman titi oyschal l'shama, I will deliver you for destruction. V'yeshvechol l'shreika, for hissing. The cherpas amiti, so you will carry the shame. The cherpa of my nation will be carried upon you. Okay, we've rounded the pesukim very quickly. Now let's go through the pesukim with much more precision. Again, let's start from pasuk Yedalid. Okay, and let's see the mitzvah started inside one pasuk at a time. Pasuk Yedalid, page 515. V'loy sisba, you will eat and you will not be satisfied. Ki siya hame'era b'me'ayim, the curse will be in your stomach. V'yesh chacha b'kirbecha, you will be lowered in amongst yourselves. What does that mean? V'sisha'er imkein hachno oscha b'kirbecha, it will remain your lowliness within you. Ki kisha adam savea rom levavo. It's a very profound idea. We had vayishman yishurun vayivat. When a person eats, he's satisfied. Vyachalto visavata v'rom levavecha v'shachachtas Hashem elokecha. When a person eats and is satisfied, he has a tendency to become arrogant and conceited. Here, when a person is eating, he's not being sad, he's not deriving any satisfaction, because there's something either wrong with his stomach or there's something wrong with his food, with the food. And thus, you will never achieve the moment of v'rom levavecha. And the contrast to v'rom levavecha, that your heart being elevated and being satisfied, will be the yesh chacha b'kirbecha. You will remain low. The word v'yesh chacha, according to the Mitzudos David, is in contrast to the word v'rom. Rom is on one end of the spectrum, exalted, rom, and the opposite end of the spectrum is yesh chacha, is shoch, is to be low, down, and humbled. How would you even know this pshat if not for the Mitzudos David? It's an incredible understanding. He's contrasting this with the pasuk of v'yachalto v'savato, and your heart will become arrogant, will become exalted. Here, no, you're not going to be satisfied. And thus, your heart will remain low. Back to the Mitzvot David, your lowliness will remain within you. When a person under normal circumstances, he eats and he's satisfied, what is the result? His heart is elevated. Aval bat kishahu ro'ev, when a person is hungry, hu shafal umuchna, when a person is hungry, he remains lowly and humble. Next it says, v'saseg v'loy saflit, af im tasig es, even if you succeed in overcoming the enemy, hamalichim es bonecha bashevi, who have taken your children to captivity, im kol ze loy tuchal lahatzil es samiyada, you'll not be able to retrieve them. Why not? Umo asher tatzel miyadai, and whatever you indeed will take back from his hands, etin lacherev ki yigbar yadoyev lahakoysam nefesh, whatever you will succeed, they will still die. I will allow the enemy to kill them. Af imlo yigbar yadoy lekachtam bashavi, even if you do not succeed to af imlo yigbar yadoy lekachtam bashavi. I'm not sure what he means by that. Vasher tifalet, that which will escape, lacherev etain. Anything that you will be able to succeed in retrieving from the enemy will anyway end up in the hands of the enemy to death, for death. Umasher tatzlom yodi etain lacherev ki yigbar yad oyev lakoy sam nefesh, af im lo yigbar yodoy lekachtam bashevi. Sometimes the enemy is successful and they take captives, and sometimes they're not successful enough to take captives, but instead they cause casualties on the battlefield. And that's here seemingly what it's in. Before we go further, he's saying over this particular episode, he's giving us a taste over here, is that you're going to have success, but you're not going to be able to carry through. And this is like so obvious, that's the curse of our times. Look at Eretz Yisrael. Look at the state of Israel. They have enough power there to conquer the whole Middle East. Okay, they have enough weapons, enough technology, and yet they can't do anything. They can't do anything. Because if they go and they say boo to the Palestinians on the West Bank, or they say boo to the people in Gaza, the whole world erupts.
Stop saying Palestinians and West Bank.
What should I say?
No such thing as either one of those.
Either one of what?
What am I supposed to say?
Okay.
Educate me.
They're the Arabs.
The Arabs, okay, and?
And there's Yehuda and Shomron.
Okay.
Part of the problem is that even we have absorbed these terms. And so we
right.
do, then everybody around us does. We have to.
Okay, you're right, you're right. Okay, you're right, you're right. Chotosi.
You know, when I was a little kid, I used to look at the map and couldn't understand why they call it the West Bank. I didn't understand. It looked like the East Bank to me, you know. I mean,
there's a West Bank in Paris,
right?
But
exactly.
Okay, but that's part of the problem we have today, is that today it is within the power of Acheinu B'nei Yisrael to obliterate the enemy, to just pulverize them,
right,
and wipe them out. And yet, we can't. We can't do it. Someone or something is holding us back. That's the curse of what it says here. It says, V'saseg, you will overcome your enemies. They have nothing. The Arabs are weaklings. They can't do a thing without Klal Yisrael. We control their electricity. They control their. And yet, when they cause us pain and suffering, we can't. V'loy saflit. We can't even go in there into that area to take back what rightfully belongs to us, because. I don't know why, because you know why, whatever it is, because of the circumstances. That is part of the curse, where you have the ability to do something and yet you're prevented from doing so. Now this idea, you should know, it really goes back to Paro. Paro, we know there were 10 Makos. And among the 10 Makos, we have this Makos Borot. And Makos Borot, Hashem introduced Makos Borot, Hinni Shalech Bochem is Kol I'm going to send now with Makas Borod all of my Makas. And Rashi on that pasuk writes, Mikan, Sheshkula Makas Borod. I'm not exactly sure of the words, but Rashi says that Makas Borod is shokul, is equal in severity, kineged all of the Makas. And all of the commentators are baffled. What in the world does Rashi mean that the Makas Borod is equal? Can they get all of the makos? Rashi seemingly is saying something that is correct, because the pasuk says, "Hinei shalachem es kol magei foisai." So this is a very, very big struggle as to what this means. To the degree where many want to say is that there's even a mistake in the girsa in the Rashi, and Rashi really means to say to the pasuk that I'm going to send kol magei foisai is not referring to borod. It's already foreshadowing the maka of makas b'chayres. Makas b'choyres. Okay, so you have to look in the pasuk, look at the Rashi, the Mefarshim. It's a very, very difficult pasuk. However, if you do take the pasuk at face value, which probably most of the commentators do, the pasuk is discussing the Makos Borod, and the pasuk indeed is telling us the Makos Borod is shokel connected all of the makos. What? Oh, so that's one answer. So
right.
you're already coming, you're giving different answers.
Well,
up to then, doesn't mean
the
that. Right. So there are many, many mahalachim. There's a long, long list of approaches. Everyone likes to discuss this idea. What does that pasuk mean? The parashas bo, the mako is a bow, the
yes.
parashas bo. Are that all of that bar is connect all the makos? But there's one answer.
No, it's the last one in the Bo'era.
Sorry, Va'era. Bo begins with Arbe. Arbe Choshech Makas Bechores. So it's the last one of Va'era, Makas. So what exactly does that mean? So among the many, many lists, the many answers, is one answer which really it resonates with me, and that is Barad was introduced with the word Hinni Mamtir Lochem. I'm going to rain down upon you Barad. Hail. And Chazal tell us that the Borod didn't begin with Borod, it began with rain. First, it began to rain, like today. It's raining outside. It was raining. And then, as the rain intensified, hailstones came down and obliterated the land. In Egypt, it never, ever rained. Never. It never rains in Egypt. In Egypt, it is scorching hot, and the way they live, they have a blessing called the Nile. And the Nile, every year, it overflows. In the springtime, it overflows, and they irrigate the fields through the abundance of the Nile. Now, to irrigate the fields is slave labor. You got to go out into the field, and you have to dig irrigation canals. You have to very carefully direct the irrigation canals to the exact location where you want the field to be watered. You have to go to the Nile and draw heavy buckets of water and bring it to this location, that location. It's an amazing thing. There's an abundance of water, but there's a great expense. And that is slave labor to irrigate and to water the field. In Eretz Yisrael, there's no such thing as irrigation. There is no Nile. How do the fields get wet? How are they watered? It rains. A miracle. It just rains. Hashem opens up the heavens and it rains. You don't have to lift a finger. What the earth is watered and nurtured in Eretz Yisrael without man lifting a finger. In Egypt, you got to work. You have to sweat bullets in order to irrigate your field. But there's a difference. In Eretz Yisrael, there's no guarantee that it's going to rain. A whole season can go by, nothing. In Egypt, the Nile always has water. Okay, maybe it was a rough here and there, but track record is really good. 99.9% of the time, the Nile rises, it's flooded, there's an abundance. It's just a matter of picking yourself up and going out into the field and irrigating and picking up some buckets of water, carrying them on your shoulder, and engaging in slave labor, toil, in order to water your field. So where would you rather live? Would you rather live in Egypt, where you're guaranteed to have parnassa as long as you work very, very, very hard? Or would you live in Eretz Yisrael, where you don't have to lift your finger, but you have to daven to Hashem that it should rain? Because if you don't dive into Hashem that it's going to rain, it's not going to rain. This is the difference between Egypt and Mitzrayim, between Egypt and Eretz Yisrael. It's Pasuk Ekev, that I'm taking you to Eretz Yisrael. It's not like Egypt, Asher, that the earth is watered. That you came there, Kigan HaYirok, there, you're guaranteed. You're coming now into Eretz Yisrael, it's a trade-off. Mitzad Echa, you don't got to work. Yeah, it's easy as can possibly be. Mitzat Sheni, you got to work spiritually. You have to dive into Hashem. In Egypt, they have no kasaga of this concept. But what happened was, one time in history, they were in Egypt, and they saw that it began to rain. And they saw the blessing of what it's like not to have to work. They saw what it's like that the Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of you. They were lying at home, and it's raining. Wow, someone did for me the back-breaking labor of watering my field. Wow, who did this? I'm sitting at home, relaxing, watching television, and there, my field is being watered. Who was so kind to do this for me? The Ribbono Shel Olam. Then what happened? Well, you're a bunch of Rishonim. So now let me go and bring hailstones and destroy the whole land. Part of the makkah of Barad was the Egyptians got a taste of what it's like to live under the blessing, under the hashgacha of the Ribbono Shel Olam of blessing. When Paro said to Moshe, read the psuk, and Paro said to Moshe, stop the hail. You have to read the psukim very carefully. I don't remember all the details. He told them, stop the hail, but don't stop the rain. Don't stop the rain. This phenomenon of rain is just so amazing, so beautiful. We don't want the hailstones, but we do want the rain. Moshe gave them a taste of what it's like to live in a world when you are observant, when you are close to Hashem, when you are Yirei Shemayim. He gave them a taste of what that's like. And then it was taken away from them. And then Hashem teased them. That is the ultimate punishment. Until now, all of the makos was just plain, simple punishment. You're evil, you're bad, dam, sardeya.
It says the borrow stop. And then it says the borrow of the motor. So that's the
possible. He asks that it goes together. The two things go together. Paro, and the reason why Makas borrowed. The reason why Makas borrowed was shakal kineged kol ha-makos is because it was different than all of the other makos. The other makos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just punished them. In this makas, Hashem said to them, look at the reward. Let me tease you. Look at what you could have had. Let me show you what I was saving for you. And guess what? You're not getting it. You know why? Because you're a shoyim. That is the worst. Okay? That's what they say Gehenim is. Gehenim is not that Hashem takes the neshama and just, okay, here, go into the fire. Okay? We're going to purify you. You know what Gehenim is? You stand outside Gan Eden and say, you see what you could have had? You see, this could have been yours. And you know something? You're not getting it because you don't deserve it. And a person, he burns himself up. The tsar that comes upon the person realizing what he could have had is so painful, it's worse than any fire in this world. 60 times any fire in this world, it's the tsar of realizing what you could have had.
What you missed.
What you missed out on. That's the ultimate tsar. That's why Borod was the worst, because Hashem gave them rain. Could you imagine what it was like in Egypt to have rain? We'd have to go and break, crushing labor to go irrigate the fields. And Hashem, you see, you could have had rain, but you're Rishoyim, so you're not getting it. The Mutter is going to stop as well. Unfortunately, that's exactly here, the intensity of Micha. Look, we learned last week, V'gam ani hecheleisi hakoisecha. Micha is very frustrated. Micha is very similar to Leo Hanavi. He says to Hashem, bring it on. Bring it on the Jewish people. Let them suffer. So Hashem just said, listen, there's a mate, a stick. A rod is coming to give us a zetz. Micha said, no, Hashem, I want you to intensify their punishment. And how does he demand that the punishment be intensified? With the ultimate punishment of what it says here in these three psukim, where Hashem says, let them eat. Give them a taste of good food. But just, they should not be satisfied. When you eat good food, so you're already, there's an expectation. If I'm eating good, healthy, nutritious food, I'm expecting I should be satisfied. It's just a tease. I took out the important nutrients in the food that's going to prevent you from being satisfied. I'm going to let you plant. You're going to sow. There's an expectation. The forecast, the economic forecast is incredible. We're expecting a growth spurt. Guess what? Failure. The expectations did not come to be. Here, you're going to overcome your enemies. We won, right? All the enemies, they're putting up the white flag. The expectation is victory. And then what happens? It just doesn't carry through. It doesn't go through. When there is great expectation and it's squashed, it's denied, this is the ultimate tsar. And that's what it means. These psukim are a continuation of what it says in the Pasuk Yud Gimel, Hecheleisi HaKoisech. I'm demanding from Hashem that your punishment be intensified. The intensification is the tease. where you tease. The worst thing always to tease someone, to say, oh, do I have a story to tell you? You know what happened? I'm not telling you. I'm not telling you. People will kill you for that, right? If you don't want to tell me, so don't tease me and tell me you have something you want to tell me. It's very, very painful. It's very, very frustrating. And that is exactly what's happening over here in this pasuk, according to Pshut Shel Mikra. Let's go now to pasuk Tezvav in Mitzudas David. Continuation pasuk Tezvav in Mitzudas David on page 515. V'loy sikso, you're not going to harvest. Ki'oyev yiktsu yiktsuru li atzma. The enemy will harvest it for himself. Look what happened in Gush Katif. Is that a horror of over here? This whole thing over here. They built here these greenhouses and they accomplished the most incredible things. Okay, the most incredible things with incredible technology. Okay, at the end of the day, who got it? And we call the Arabs. The Arabs. They stole it from us. You're right. You're 100% right. They stole it from us. They stole it and they couldn't do it. And they couldn't do anything anyway. The shemazels, they destroyed everything they took. So that is part of the Micha. Every time you see something like this in Eretz Yisrael, you have to go back to Sefer Micha and review his Musa because this unique type of punishment where Kadosh Baruch Hu teases us to a very large degree is unique to Micha. So when you see in Eretz Yisrael such a thing happening where it's biodenu. It's Biodenu, right? Talk about, how can I forget his name? The prisoners of war. What's his name? The last one, the
Bamel.
Not Bamel, the prisoners of war. Gilad Shalit. Gilad Shalit. Supposedly, they knew exactly where he was. They knew they were following his every move, supposedly, the Israelis. Is it true or not? I don't know. They have a lot of technology there. So why couldn't they just go and do a raid and go get him? You know, isn't it amazing? It is really true that they knew every single moment of the day. They knew exactly where he was, exactly where he's being held, and they can just go in there with a SWAT team and take him out. So what's holding you back? Obviously, there were other considerations that they didn't want to make World War III. Okay, they didn't want everything. They didn't want the whole. I guess they felt as long as he's not being malnourished and he's not being mistreated, for whatever reason, they felt it wasn't worth it. Supposedly, I don't know who knows all these things. Everything he said this. You know, you have to read all these articles, but it's not so far fetched to believe that it's 100% true. It seems like they have. You know, it's not such a big area. The territory of Eretz Yisrael is not all that big, and the technology they have, we all know, is second to none. What?
Quite a few informants
and this technology. There's a lot of overlap in their abilities to do a lot of things, and yet it's mamish what it says here in this pasuk. Vissaseg, you'll overcome your enemies. V'loy saflit, and you can't even pull off an extraction. You can't even pull out your own prisoner of war. You can't even pull him out. Send in a SWAT team. Obviously, the political fallout. Exactly. See, even Michal is saying it's not so simple, right? It's not so simple.
Besides which, they're not risk takers.
Whatever, so obviously.
Lost a life.
They don't like.
Supposedly,
the army hierarchy does not like to risk failure. They're risk avoiders.
Whatever it is, but you see here a definitely a taste of this pasuk in the 21st century where that we can all relate to, and you can open up a newspaper and you can mamash see this pasuk come alive. This saseg, you control these people, you control their every move, you can listen to every conversation they're having on the telephone, you can see every movement they're making, you can do whatever you want, and yet you can't even do something so simple like take a Jewish soul and pull him out from their captivity. V'loy saflit. You can't pull off an extraction, yeah.
Giant.
Pitiful, helpless giant. Yeah. Exactly. So, you can have all the power, but yet you can't do anything.
Power, but then there's asymmetrical warfare and so on.
That's exactly what this pasuk over here is saying. Okay, next, Mesilas Davin, page 516. I'm sorry, 517. V'lois asuch shemen, you'll go and you'll squeeze the olives, but the oil will not come forth. V'lois asuch im hashemen ki oyev yikochem. You're not going to benefit because the enemy will take your oil. V'sirosh tidrich es in ve'hayayin, the wine. V'sirosh, the wine. V'tidrich es in ve'hayayin, you're not going to benefit. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, there's a certain shortage. What was there a shortage of? Cheese? I read this article, they had this whole thing about food industry, that Eretz Yisrael is one of the biggest producers of a certain dairy product. I forgot which product, something, it was a dairy product. They're the ones who produce it, and you cannot even purchase it in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because it's all exported. Why? Because they make money. They make a lot of money by exporting it to other countries.
Why would oranges are very expensive also?
Why? Because they export all over the world. So in Eretz Yisrael, there are certain products in Eretz Yisrael which are not available in Eretz Yisrael. How could that possibly be? Mm-hmm. It's also part of the curse. Here is the place where they're producing this product, and you can't even get it. There's a lot of technology also. You would think in Eretz Yisrael, it's so advanced. It's so advanced. A lot of the inventions we have today in America are come from Eretz Yisrael. So you'd expect if you go to Eretz Yisrael, you would find it there. Certain drugs, and certain types of technology. And you go to Eretz Yisrael, and you have to go to America. What do you have to go to America? Who's the one who invented this? It was invented by Israeli startups in Eretz Yisrael. You can't get Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because the licensing, the one who paid for it was America or so-and-so, and it has to be exported. That's also a curse. If this is the place where it was invented, it is naturally produced, don't you think it should be available for the locals at a very, very reasonable, certain medications, certain types of electronics? No. In Eretz Yisrael, you can't get this medicine. You have to go to America to get the medicine. What do you mean? It was made, developed, manufactured here in Eretz Yisrael. I have to go to America to get it in America?
Elite bazooka gum.
Bazooka gum?
Kashrut Pesach, you cannot get it in all of Eretz Yisrael. I searched.
And where do they manufacture it? In Eretz Yisrael. Okay? That's a dogma of much more, of much bigger things. I was reading about certain technologies. This applies to medicines, and applies also to certain very sophisticated types of technology that is in the Eretz Yisrael, either non-existent or very expensive. I don't remember what it was. Certain, I don't remember, electronics.
Microsoft invested hundred million dollars for it, and they were selling, they were selling, that's the money to sell it to countries, and now Microsoft claims that they cannot sell it because it's used for policing the people, and Microsoft is very against it. So now that's what is here, their product, it's your own product, and you can't even use it.
Unbelievable, right? That you find that in Eretz Yisrael, that's part of the curse of Micha. Exactly, you produce the oil. Oil? Yeah, you squeeze the oil? No, you can't have it. You produce the grapes? No, not for you. Not for you. It's for someone else. Okay. You know the joke? It reminds me of the joke. You have a person. This is not a nice joke, but I want to shake you all up now. Person, he makes a good parnas. He supports the whole family. He supports the whole family. And now he's dying. He's a goyseis. They light the candles. The candles around his bed. Okay? And it's imminent. He's going to die. And he smells, delicious fragrance. Delicious. It smells like apple pie. Apple pie. By the way, who paid for the apple pie? This is a guy who's dying. He supports the whole family, right? And he says to his child, "My child, it smells delicious. Can you bring me from the kitchen a piece of an apple pie?" Like, who paid for that apple pie? He did, right? So he says, "Mommy said it's for after the funeral." Right? So that's the same thing over here. Who paid for it? I paid for the apple pie. Let me have a piece before I go. No, that's part of the curse over here. Okay, further. Chukos, now here's a little bit, here we need some background in Tanakh. Chukos, Amri v'chol ma'asei beis achav, heim ha-mishtamrim v'chukosai lo yishtamru. They are the guardians, okay, the mishtamrim, but my ordinances, my laws, they do not guard. Now let's read the pasuk over here. V'yishtamer chukos Amri. The people of the society are guarding the laws of Omri and Beis Achav, two wicked kings. Okay, two wicked kings, and obviously he's dating himself, Micha, by saying the words Omri and Beis Achav. He's referring to this tekufa of Shomrin, of these wicked kings who introduced Avodah Zarah into Klal Yisrael, and the people are willing to give up their lives for their king. They're willing to give up their lives to support and to guard, to protect these kings, which are Oivdei Avodah Zarah. But who gave them the right to exist, to live in this land? Only the Ribbono Shel Olam gave them the right to live in this land. They have an obligation to guard Hashem's laws. So here he's coming to emphasize the corruption. These are people who HaKadosh Baruch Hu has guarded, has given them this land, and they have become corrupt, and they're worshiping idols, and people are supporting them. Mitzvot David, Heim HaMishtamrim, they are being guarded by the society, but V'chukosai, they are not observing Lo Yishtamru, they are not observing my mitzvahs. V'tam V'cherpas Ami Masha Yisem Mecharfim Oivdei Hashem, this that you go and you disgrace those who serve Hashem, Tiso HaGemul, you will suffer. This is a problem that we have to go back and study Tanakh, the time period. This is a very, very common. This is a very common theme in the Malchus of Yisrael. In the Malchus of Yisrael, they persecuted people who were tzaddikim. If you were a tzaddik, if you were a navi, if you were a person that was a shomer in Torah mitzvahs, you were persecuted. In other words, it wasn't just live and let live. We live in America, Baruch Hashem, America, freedom of religion. If you want to be an Avodah Zarah, you want to be a Buddhist, you want to be a Christian, you want to go do strange things, you want to be a Mormon, mind your own business, gesunte hate. Okay? Freedom of religion, live and let live. That's not the way it was in Eretz Yisrael. Achav and all of his followers, they were Oivdei Avodah Zarah, and they would seek out any religious, any traditional, observant Jew who was Oivei Hashem, was despised. He was ridiculed, and at times he was persecuted. And that's exactly over here where the Navi is coming over here to complain about. The Yishtamer Chukos Amri, the Chomase Veisachav, the people over here, they're guarding the ideology of Amri and Veisachav, Vatelchu Bimo Ad Soisam, and the people are following in the worship of idols. The word Mo Ad Soisam means in their sadness. It is a term used to refer to a euphemism for idols. Leman Titi Oischa Leshama. Here's the point that the Mishnah is making. They observe or desire to the degree where they declare anyone that follows in the way of Hashem should be destroyed. Has to be uprooted. It's not like America. Live and let live. We're going to seek out the Oivdei Hashem to be Lishama. They make me, Hashem is saying, me, my people, the people that are observant of my mitzvahs, Lishama, V'yoshveha, the inhabitants who are observant of serving Hashem, Lishreka, to hiss, to whistle, to ridicule, even if maybe the law protects them, that they're allowed to serve Hashem, maybe in certain different periods of time it was different, but at the very least, the people would ridicule and mock them for being Shomer Torah Hashem, the Cherpas Ami Tisohu, and therefore you, the people, are going to bear the disgrace of my people. Ami over here refers to the people who are observant of Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, we will lose less wisdom still one more time, V'tam, the Cherpasami, Ma Shayisim Mechorfim, Oivdei Hashem, this that you are Mechorfim, you insult, you disgrace those who serve Hashem, T tisahu, you will ultimately suffer the punishment. Hagamul oy hatam, cherpas ami tisu aleichem, kiderch v'cherpa loy nasa al kerevoy, the cherpa, the disgrace of the people will come upon you. Okay, a similar idea, but you're going to suffer, you're going to suffer for causing my people disgrace. Now let's see Rashi. Rashi going back in Pasuk, going back to the Pasuk, Yudalit. Pasuk page 514. The Yesh Chacha Bikir Becha. Going back to the food. I'm going to give you food. You're going to eat, but you're not going to be satisfied. And instead, the Yesh Chacha. Rashi, Hamachol Shetoichal Achnisboi Me'ira B'soch Chame'ayim. The food, you have this in the Teichacha. The food that goes into your stomach will be filled with a curse. And what's the curse? V'yigrom l'cha choyli shetehei choyle, you'll be sick, v'choylech shechoyach, you're going to walk low. You're going to walk bent over. V'chein mifaresh oysa b'sifrei minayin af b'sech ha-me'ayim. How do you know that the food will be cursed in your stomach? Tamoloymar, v'yeshchacha b'kirbecha, it will be, you will be low within you. V'parashas v'choy eke b'midrash, tamid in yeshem l'kecha ba, that medrash, that's what explains this idea. Af yonisam tegim kein v'yilcha limra, it'll be a curse. Micha also means a curse, a smiting, a curse of being smitten bim'och in your stomach. You know what this refers to? This refers to the curse of the microwave. The microwave, go online and read what it says, because don't trust me, that when you heat up something in the microwave, it destroys, the process of radiation destroys the nutritional good, 90% of the nutritional good elements of the food is destroyed. So even though you may put something in your stomach that tastes delicious, it's hot, you take a piece of pizza. You know, there's a way to make pizza in the microwave also. Not, it shouldn't come out soggy. There's a way, but convection is not, no, convection is good. Convection is a regular oven, just the heat. But you put it in the microwave, let's say you'll put a delicious piece of pizza in the microwave, you'll have it ready in 1 minute, and it'll taste good, crisp, if you know how to do it. You know how to do it. There's a way to do it. No, there's a way to do it. You have to trust the bacher. A bacher will tell you all the tricks of the trade. Okay? We live in a microwave generation. I want it hot, and I want it now. And what is the consequence? You put something in that machine, it destroys the nutritional good benefits. Oh, I don't know how these things work, but read up on this online. It's incredible. You'll eat something, it tastes good, but you have to realize the radiation in that device that has warmed it up in record time has destroyed the parts, the molecules of the food that give you health, that give you v'rom levavecha. So your stomach may be full, but you'll walk around feeling weak and tired, and your body will not be getting the nutrients that it needs. So isn't that what it says over here? I'm going to give you food. You live in America. There's fast food. Go into Burger King and McDonald's, and you have fast food. It tastes delicious. V'yachato soichal v'loy sispa. It's not going to give your body any satisfaction. V'yeshchacha b'kirbecha. Your inside, your organs, are going to be starving. You may have satisfaction for eating all of this chazarai. You may have a lot of satisfaction, but you don't know what you're doing to your body. And science has not even yet come and realized, the surgeon general is still in the dark about exactly how we all hear all these things today. We find out today, only 30, 40 years later, wow, what were we thinking 30 years ago to do this? Why were we allowing people to eat this type of stuff? And not today, people are becoming much more health conscious and realize how poisonous a lot of these things are. I read there's a lot of stuff going on today. For example, sugar. 30 years ago started. What is it called? Sweetener. Where they put. No, not saccharin. I'm talking about regular sugar. What do they use today? I forgot what it is. No, I'm not talking about artificial. I'm talking about not artificial. What's it? What?
Corn syrup.
Okay, the corn syrup. The sweetener. The high fructose, right. How many years is that in existence? About 35 years. That's it. Before 35 years ago, all sweeteners were natural. And this also, the high fructose corn is also natural. It's also natural. Partially. That's why they get away with it. And now, it's incredible what's coming out. They're trying to attribute mamish zel uma zel on charts, certain types of issues, dementia. They're trying very hard to prove that there's an incredible proportional relationship between high fructose sugar and dementia. Shocking to say such a thing, but the evidence is like almost compelling.
Is it convection oven is also as bad?
No, convection oven is a regular oven. It just moves things around. It just blows the air around, right? As far as I know, a convection oven. So I would say it's an incredible thing. It's society, the whole world. They're living longer, but there are obviously a lot of issues that are going on. A lot of problems today with different health issues that we've never seen before. I don't know. I'm not. It's all of this. No one really knows. It's all a big who says this, that. Look what's going on now with people becoming very conscious of Wi-Fi. You know, outside the United States, we Wi-Fi is, you have Wi-Fi all over the place. Outside the United States, you know that it's illegal to have Wi-Fi in a kindergarten, in elementary school. It's mamish illegal. They can lock you up in jail because they really are not certain. They're not certain if the radiation that comes. You plug every, who doesn't have a Wi-Fi router in their house? There's not a person in this room itself. There's Wi-Fi. Who doesn't have Wi-Fi? You know that in outside the United States, they lock you up. They come, they inspect it, there's Wi-Fi in the kindergarten. They're afraid that children are very delicate. It could affect them, especially girls, especially young girls. Because girls, a child, a female girl, is born with all of her reproductive organs at birth. A man replenishes. A man's zera replenishes. But a female, a woman is born with approximately 400 eggs, and they're all there from the day she's born. And if it's in an area with a lot of radiation, it could be a very big problem. So it's illegal. It's mamish illegal until they become older. And in the United States, what are you talking about? Out of your mind? What are you talking about? Who ever heard of these things? Listen, so I don't know. I'm no different than anyone else. I don't have any protections for any of these things, but there's a lot of talk. People are talking about it more and more and more and more, especially now when they released 5G. 5G is 10 times more powerful than 4G. Everyone here has a 4G cell phone. Everyone in this room has in their pocket a 4G cell phone, which is the sakana. And now they've released thing very slowly. Your next phone will be a 5G. And the 5G is a new technology, which is 10 times more powerful than 4G. And this has woken up a lot of people. A lot of people now are really being tzitzit from this. And the United States is way behind. So we know what's going on. No one knows anything. Over here, he's saying incredible things, Michal. He's saying over here is, if you don't behave, you don't even realize. It's a very frightening klala. Because you don't, the part of the different, the first approach we learned in the Mitzudos is, the klala is you're going to eat, but you're not going to be satisfied. And you're going to know that you're not satisfied. Like I could tell the example I gave you from Paro. They saw what it means, rain. Wow, rain. Let the rain keep on coming. No, we're taking away from you. But there's a deeper approach to the pasuk, and that is, you're going to eat, and you're not going to even realize that you're not satisfied. You're going to squeeze the grapes. You're not going to even realize that there's no one. You're going to be fooling yourself. You're going to think you have it all. And you're not going to even realize you're missing the quality that is beneficial. And it's mamish today. That's one of the cases today. Today, we know it as a fact. We know it as a fact. You go put something in a microwave. Listen, everyone needs a snack. But if you live 24/7 in a microwave, you're in trouble. Okay, if you go to a microwave or whatever, once in a while, no big deal. But every single, obviously we can appreciate there is so much truth to this type of concept of you're going to eat, v'lo sisba, v'yeshchacha b'kirbecha. Inside of your stomach, your organs are going to be screaming, I'm starving. And there's no one to talk to because in your mind, I had a delicious meal. I had a delicious meal. You're not realizing the effect of what is coming upon us. And that's why we need Micha to warn us to do teshuvah. So we should not, these things should never, chas v'shalom, come to be in a way that we can't guard ourselves from. Okay, further in the Rashi, Rashi v'saseg esayvecha, you're going to overcome your enemy, hamalichim banecha v'nosecha, which are going to take your children of v'nosecha bashavi, v'loy sefaltem, and you're not going to be able to extract them, v'im tefaltem soifam lachavan. Even if you do succeed in taking the children out, they're going to be killed by the sword. Now, before we go further, even that is, in other words, this also, people today, you don't even realize how influenced we are by our environment. You send your kids to yeshiva, and they learn, seemingly the whole day, but the influences in the yeshiva itself of all of the new things totally takes over. So even though you have overcome, over here he interprets this as your children, you're going to overcome your enemies, your children. You're going to think in your mind that you have control over your children. But the truth is, your children are aliens. They've been taken over by aliens, by other influences that are so enticing, are so addictive, that even though when you talk to them, it seems like you're talking to them, but their minds are elsewhere. And this is a very, very big problem. So this is all part of what he's saying. Now he goes into something entirely different. Okay, this is, if you listen to the radio for 5 minutes, maybe less than five, I can't even believe I'm saying these things, but if you listen to the radio for less than 5 minutes, you know what I'm talking about. You know obviously what we're talking about. And if a person will succeed in having children, Rachmana Litzlan, there's a curse here, they will be given over to the enemy. The first temptation, that the children will be given over, your children will be captured by the enemy, and you will overcome the enemy, but yet, even though you will succeed in overcoming the enemy, you will not be able to extract your children from their captivity, and if you do succeed in taking them out of captivity, they will be killed, they'll be killed at a later point in time, Rachmana Litzlan. Next words of Rashi. Then he goes on to discuss Omri and Achav. Pasuk Tezayin v'yishtamer chukos Omri v'yodati ki lo yisishmu al Eli ki yishtamer al yetchem ubeneichem, because instead it will be guarded through you and your children. Kol chukos Omri v'yachav. I know I'm talking to deaf ears. I know there's no one here listening to me. I'm telling you not to listen to me. And I know when I walk away, it's business as usual. Yes, he was. Yes, you can. Or even if he's not, we have to go. He studied the people who followed in their ways. Achav set up the whole. He's the one that gets the credit for leading Klal Yisrael down the path of the Baal of Avodah Zarah. And even if I go and I walk, when I walk away from you, I know you're just going to say this guy is a lunatic. He's preaching crazy things. It's business as usual. We will make sure to pledge our allegiance and to guard the king and his servants who only want to worship Avodah Zarah and who want to eradicate any observance of Taras Hashem from Klal Yisrael. This is his parting words, Micha. I know you're not going to listen to me. You're not going to listen to me. Ki yishtamer al yetchem, but instead it will be guarded, it will be preserved through you people. Ubneichem kol chukos Omri v'Yachav, all of the laws, the corrupt laws of idolatry of Achav and his followers. The cherpas ami tisau atem tekablu avoin hacherpa. But the end of the day is you're going to suffer because you did not listen to me. You're going to suffer the disgrace. The nations will insult my nation. The Torah testifies that this is what is going to happen, that when the Jewish people worship idols and ignore Hashem, then the one that will give us Musar will be the Umay Sa'ilam. That's a very powerful idea. It says it in the Torah. Amich is coming to emphasize is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes Klal Yisrael, he doesn't punish us from within. He punishes us from without. He wants that the Ummah Yisraelim, the nations of the world, should come and say to Klal Yisrael, shame on you. Look, Hashem gave you the Torah. He did not give it to us. And let you, look how you took Hashem's gift and you have despised it. You have ignored it. You have disgraced it. And therefore, indeed, it's deserving that Hashem should punish you. This is the way of Hashem punished Klal Yisrael. She'idu b'chem Torah al-kach v'lo yelcha eifa v'eifa. And then the psukim continue there, go on to say, v'heim einam shaimrim. And the psukim there to continue that the punishment is galus. You're going to go into exile, and the Ummah Yisrael are going to say to Klal Yisrael, shame on you. Okay, let's just start with the Radak. Pasuk,
I think the point is that we are no better than they are. There's a lot of dishonesty.
We're worse. It comes back to Har Sinai. By Har Sinai, there was a great hatred which came to the world. Lilith's parasha, Yaakov and Esav. But at Har Sinai, Hashem gave Klal Yisrael the Torah. The Ummah Yisrael were deeply jealous. And that's why it's called Har Sinai, Sinai Meloshon Sina. We interchange the Samach and the Sin. From there went forth hatred. Because the Ummah Yisrael were jealous of Klal Yisrael, then we received the Torah, not they. Halacha biyadua she'esav soine Yaakov. Anti-Semitism. Remember, Chalit spoke about this with the Good Convention. The cause of anti-Semitism. The good. You told me good. There's some good stuff about anti-Semitism.
Yes.
Okay, so they went to different reasons why they hate us. There are many, many facets to anti-Semitism. It's an extremely complex topic. There are many different reasons. The bottom end of the day is halacha biyadua esav soine Yaakov. Why they hate us? That's a very, very complicated topic of discussion, but they hate us. But one of the reasons, what? What to do about it?
But the, Rav Kamenetsky did devote some time to
cause. Shalom Kamenetsky, he's a real star. I'm a fan of his. He has great stuff.
I didn't know who he was, but he is remarkably eloquent.
He's incredible. He's a Roshiva. He took over his father pretty much in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
Philadelphia. He's a really with it, a real with it Rosh Shiva. He's so in tune. Is he a Pesach? I'm not aware he's a Pesach, but he's a very, very tremendous, incredible Talmud Chacham. He prays basically, I think he runs the yeshiva now, no? I think he runs the yeshiva.
I was speaking to him like a regular.
And doesn't he look very distinguished?
Yeah.
He's tall, he's a very big, he's very good looking, he's very, very... No, he has a very striking appearance, and has a hadras upon him. Very eloquent, and he's really, really with it. That's the word. He's very with it. He's from the now. He's the budding Gedolei Hadar. We're in good hands with him. He's from the Gedolei Hadar. He's not afraid of anything. He's not afraid to touch any topic. There's nothing that's too controversial for him to get involved in. And he says it as it is, in a very sweet, nice, delicate way that...
I'm sure some of his vocabulary went right over the heads of a lot of people.
Wow. Okay, he's... In Philadelphia, they're very machbir. They used to be, at least, I don't know, today, they're very machbir to get a very good, solid... secular education, at least the high school was till 12th grade, correct. After that, it's a different story. Even though those who go out into the business world, they go on for further education. There are a lot of Columbia lawyers that have come from Harvard. You have to go to college to get into Harvard.
No, but
Harvard Law School will not take someone with LSATs. Harvard, not, it's very rare. Harvard demands a very good college education. Columbia, for some bizarre reason, they don't pay much attention to your college education. I don't know why. If you have a very, very high score on the LSATs, then there's a possibility that you can get in. Possibility. It doesn't always work for you. I know people who have gone there. And they get in, but because they didn't go to college, they have a very, very hard time.
Yeah, my son said they can't write.
Right. It's a problem. It's a problem. People, they get in, they take you in if you have very, very high grades, but when they get in, many of them have a much more difficult time because they don't really have a true solid background to survive and to compete. What?
Have a good hand, but they have to have skill.
Right. So some of them catch up very quickly and some don't.
I don't know. On the other hand, law school is very amenable to people who understand bubba patia, bubba comma.
Right, but you still need the skills. You still need the basic education. You need the discipline of going to college, of getting 128 credits, real credits, and sitting in classes and then going through the entire thing. It's true. I know people who've gone there, they did not succeed. And even those who did succeed, got through law school very well, their career was very short-lived. They got a job, they worked a couple of years, and they just didn't do well because there's more to it than just getting in. In Harvard, people of Harvard will not take someone. Listen, I was following all of these all the stats. Unless you have a very solid college education, because they consider that to be a very valuable, very fundamental requirement in order for you to succeed down the line. Whatever, none of my business. But there was a beautiful, beautiful video last year. If anyone wants to watch, you can get it online. Is the high school graduation of the students singing the Star Spangled Banner and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
That was
Rav Kamenetsky. He was standing right there. He was standing right there, Shepping Nachas. He was standing right there with all the Rosh Yeshiva, and it was remarkable. And I always tell people, show me any non-Jew in the entire United States of America, any graduating public school or private school, non-Jewish, Christian, you name it, anything that can come near the dignity and the dignity in how they said the Star Spangled Banner, the discipline, how they presented themselves and sang and said the Pledge of Allegiance, except for one guy there that was smirking. There was one guy there that ruined the whole thing. He was smirking. The one kid there that was smirking a little bit. But everyone else was top of their game. Okay, so he wasn't in that video of Sholem Kamenetsky, but I was very impressed with him in the things that I've seen about him. Any event, this can, over here we have here, okay, at least we learned through the Psukim, we went through a couple of ideas, two major ideas. We did the Mitzudos, we did Rashi, and we're going to stop here and take a very short break.